Hi, this is Nicole Hemsoth, editor of HPC Wire, here with today's edition of Soundbite, our daily interview series featuring researchers, thought leaders, and newsmakers in the world of high-performance computing. On today's edition of Soundbite, we'll be talking with Dr. Kirk Born, professor of astrophysics and computational science at George Mason University, about managing the data avalanche in astronomy. Born has been involved in a number of data-intensive astrophysics projects, including data mining on the Galaxy Zoo database of galaxy classifications. We'll talk about some of his experiences today and what challenges lie ahead for astronomy. Hi, Kirk.
Hello, Nicole.
Great to talk to you today.
Thank you for the invitation.
Most research fields can make the claim of having a data problem, right? But from what I understand, astrophysics takes the cake. Is that a true statement? And if so, why is this? What's leading to this?
Well, I would say nowadays, astrophysics is the icing on the cake. There was a time in the not too distant past, maybe 15 years ago, where astrophysics was really ahead of the game in terms of recognizing the growth and data volumes and the need for high performance computing to deal with those data analysis challenges. But I think everybody in the world now, in all sciences and health and medicine and government and social media, these are all these dimensions are recognizing the power and growth of data volumes and opportunities to make discoveries from data. But the astrophysics discoveries in my mind are sort of the really exciting things, what's happening in our universe. And so that's the icing on that big data cake.
On the big data cake. So you're actually one of the few academically oriented experts on big data, at least the most vocal, and that's interesting to me. Do you think you define big data differently than say, the enterprise or commercial world?
Yes, I've actually been on some other radio talks and with commercial and vendors and folks like this, and it's really interesting to hear the different perspectives on big data. And I think the main thing to capture from all of this is that big data is a concept. I mean, the word big obviously implies a lot of things like big volume, big variety, high rates at which the data are coming at you. But big data overall is a concept. And so for hardware vendors, it frequently big data refers to that big data computation environment. To the retail people, big data refers to, for example, the social media channel that from which they learn how customers are reacting to their products, reacting to ads. And so there's a discussion that people say, is big data all about the computer? Or is big data all about Twitter and Facebook? But for me, what I see as the real academic research dimension of it is that big data refers to what we're doing nowadays, which is basically measuring and tracking everything, whether it's things in space, astrophysically, or things in medicine, or whatever dimension you're looking at, whether it's homeland security or astrophysics, we're now putting essentially a sensor on everything, measuring everything. And the ability to make discoveries from this data stream is what the sort of the scientific academic research dimension that I really most appreciate about it.
Right. So when you take a look at the whole of astrophysics data, and I understand that's probably very challenging to do, what are some of the most prominent challenges when you look across those data sets? Is it the diversity of that data? Is it the fact that it's just so large that finding the meaningful signal and the noise is the real difficult part?
I'd say from the astrophysics perspective, the real biggest challenge is the complexity, the variety of the data, as people call it, meaning sort of the high dimensionality of the data. Just for example, for like galaxies in the universe, we have many different observational catalogs, like the Sloan Digital Sky Survey and the 2-micron All-Sky Survey and the Galax Ultraviolet Survey and many others, and more to come in the future. And there's many thousands of parameters measured for each object in our database. And so exploring that complex space for new patterns, new trends, new discoveries, new classes of object, that's, for me, the really big challenge for astronomy. I think if you look at the actual volume of data, the petabytes astronomers have, it's actually a big number, but it's small compared to a lot of other things like the social media and the intelligence community data sets. So we're not really at that level of volume, but we're certainly at a level of complexity that would stand up against any other.
So then the challenge is meshing together all of those disparate data types into one coherent piece that you can then analyze. Is that correct?
That's right. And so if you're doing like a thousand dimensional correlation matrix, I mean, that's a, you know, that's a thousand by a thousand matrix. So there's a million cells in such a matrix that needs computing. And if you start getting to higher dimensions, which we're now getting from many more sky surveys, our astronomical objects may soon have tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of measurements, especially from these surveys which are doing time series measurements, repeated measurements. And so if we start looking at a cross-correlation matrix of 100,000 by 100,000, now we're talking billions of individual elements that need to be computed, and discovery from that, which has to basically look at all pairwise and three-wise and four-wise correlations, now we're talking, you know, 10 to the very large power of computations needed.
Right. So there's a nice blending then between high-performance computing and what you would call big data, just meaning the kind of software piecing together side of this.
That's right. The ability to do inference from large data requires pretty complex models, and the high-performance computing is really the only way we can blend those two things.
So let's talk about all this in some kind of context. I know that you were involved in the data mining on the Galaxy Zoo database of galaxy classifications. Can you describe what that project is and what some of the challenges were there?
So the Galaxy Zoo project is a citizen science project in which about a million galaxies are presented to a volunteer community of people from around the world, from all walks of life. And there's, I don't even know the number now, maybe 700,000 or 800,000 volunteers who participate, and they're presented an image of a galaxy, and they get to classify it for us. And I should say, by classify, I actually mean characterize, describe what they see. Is it spiral-shaped or elliptical-shaped? Mm-hmm. Is it round? Is it flat? Is it interacting with another galaxy? Whatever. And so we have this output, which is this what we call the click database, or the votes, if you will. On average, about 200 people have looked at each of these million galaxies. And so from these 200 votes of us as to what people think the galaxy is, we get a pretty interesting mix of data. That is, there are some cases where pretty much everyone agrees on what the galaxy is, maybe over 90% in agreement. And then you get some that are like right in the middle, that is, people are split 50-50, that they think it's one thing or they think it's the exact opposite thing, like a spiral galaxy versus an elliptical galaxy. And so the project we've been looking, performing, is the application of machine learning and data mining algorithms on these galaxies to see if we can really see what's the difference between a galaxy where everyone can agree on it and a galaxy where there's such diversity of opinion.
So the computational requirements for a project like this are minimal compared to the data analysis. Is that correct?
Well, the actual works to do the analysis is kind of simplistic, but the real interesting thing we're discovering is that we have to look at many dozens of parameters for these galaxies that have been measured and stored into astrophysics databases. And if we look at this as like a 70-dimensional cross-correlation problem, that's where we're starting to get into this very complex computational paradigm. Even though the question we're asking might be simple, that is, you know, is there some correlation in, you know, four dimensions, five, six, seven, or 70 dimensions? That becomes a very computationally intensive problem.
I understand. What's the status right now of this Galaxy Zoo project? It sounds very interesting.
Well, there's so many things we can be doing with it, and believe me, we're just like it's like a child in a candy store. We don't almost know where to go next. But we have this really interesting idea what we're developing called, in the field of data mining, it's called, or in statistics, called latent variable discovery. And the example I love to use, if people are familiar with sentiment analysis in social media, where companies are mining customers' comments on social media, on web pages, in Facebook, on Twitter, to see if people, you know, feel good or feel bad about their product. And mm-hmm. So typically, the words people use don't actually come out and say, I hate this product or I love this product. It might be something more subtle, like wow, look at this. And so is that a positive or a negative? And so embedded in the words that people use, there's actually a hidden variable, which is how they actually feel about it. And so we're sort of taking that same concept to galaxy classification. That is, when people look at the galaxy, they just see that there's something odd about these galaxies that lead, you know, to people having very diverse classifications. And we're trying to discover what that is. the very first thing we try is just looking at the catalog entries for those galaxies, like shapes, sizes, colors, dimensions of all kinds that we've measured, and try to see if we can find a pattern in those parameters that suggests why people would have a diverse opinion. And we haven't been able to find it. In fact, our predictive models are absolutely terrible. That is to say, like 5% accuracy. And it's like, well, that's worse than random. So something is wrong. And so we're trying to do this a sort of latent or hidden variable discovery statistical analysis on it, which basically means looking at all sort of linear and nonlinear combinations of existing variables to see if any of those correlate. And that, again, turns into a very large computational problem.
Mm-hmm. You know, I follow some of your work, and by the way, I should mention you're very active on Twitter, which is a lot of where I've seen your ideas on things. What are some of the statistical tools of note, and what do you think is on the horizon for research like this, and even for enterprise data research?
Well, I think a lot of companies are sort of looking at this computing paradigm called MapReduce or Hadoop, which is a specific implementation of that paradigm. And what it is just basically distributing your work to a large number of processors and doing very simple computations on each processor. And that's sort of what we're doing here. We're doing these very simple pairwise or threewise or fourwise correlations. And, you know, it's not rocket science. It's pretty basic statistics from textbooks probably decades ago. But doing it on tens of thousands, if not tens of millions, of nodes distributed computing environment is where the real challenge is, but it's also the place where that discovery is going to be made. So people who are doing sort of traditional high-performance computing probably is not exactly the right computing paradigm. The real interesting compute paradigm now is graph computing, or graph processing, where you look at it as a network. You look at the data nodes as sort of linked to other data nodes. And this is becoming really popular, of course, in social network analysis. And so I like to think of my galaxies as a social network. That is, they share properties in common with other galaxies who share properties in common with other galaxies. And we build this network of knowledge, and then we try to find the strong links in that network.
Right, right. Yes, graph processing in HPC has really taken off over the last couple of years. There were, at the Supercomputing Conference this year, a number of presentations and even vendors with graph offerings, kind of interesting space. What about on the language front? I know that R has made something of a comeback over the last few years. There's also SAS. What are some of the languages that seem most promising for large-scale data analysis?
Well, I see that sort of this little war, fortunately a happy war, developing between R and Python. And what I mean by happy war is that this kind of competition stimulates, you know, greater development and more powerful tools coming out of each of those communities. I personally sort of hang around in the Python space, but the real truth of the matter is I'm trusting that my students are learning SAS or they're learning R or they're learning Python, and they will choose the tool of choice for the particular scientific problem that I present to them. And so far, that's worked pretty well for me. I can sort of, by surrogate, have other people do my R programming for me.
Oh, ulterior motives, huh?
Okay. Yeah, so I haven't actually tried to learn R, but I'm happy that there are people out there who are willing to do that.
Right, absolutely. You know, on that note, I know you've been in the education space for some time. What do you recommend for young data scientists? I know that becoming a data scientist is a cause of yours, and again, you're on the academic side, so how do you balance that out? How would you advise students for the data challenges of tomorrow?
Well, that's a really good question, and it exposes sort of a split personality I have on this particular topic. Frequently, when I give conference talks, I put it under the heading Data Science in Education and an Education in Data Science. And by that I mean, we should definitely be training people in the disciplines of data science to become data scientists. And that includes, you know, large-scale data management and computations on data, programming methods like R and Python on large data sets. It includes things like data mining, machine learning algorithms, visualization, information display, all kinds of things, you know, database structures, database indexing. All those things are relevant to a data scientist and should be taught in the context of some domain that they're working in, whether it's astrophysics or business or health or whatever. But the other side of the coin, which I'm also very passionate about, is this what we call data science in education. That is, every discipline in the world is now becoming information-driven or information-rich, whether it's, you know, journalism or medicine or even art and music. I mean, people are talking about informatics, that is, data science applied to music and dance and athletic competition. And so every student in every discipline should have some exposure to these kinds of tools, almost in the same way we require a basic math course for students to graduate in a university no matter what their field is, and a basic science course for students no matter what their field is. I firmly believe that we should require some kind of data science or informatics course for every student, no matter what field they're in.
Mm-hmm. Beginning when? You know, elementary, middle school?
I'd like to see it start at the youngest age, like preschool or kindergarten. But definitely, this should definitely be happening in high schools and colleges. And
absolutely.
People will say, well, how can you teach this to kindergartners? And my idea is that teach the concept. You're not teaching algorithms, obviously, to a kindergartner. But, for example, one thing we do in astronomy all the time is we classify and cluster things. I mean, those are the two basic fundamental concepts of data mining and machine learning. Putting things into categories, that's a classification, like is it a star or is it a galaxy? Or clustering things. We find spatial clusterings and parameter clusterings. And we discover new types of galaxies, new types of stars by looking at these clusters. Well, you can put in front of a child in kindergarten different colored blocks and different shaped toys, like, you know, round things like balls or square cube things like blocks, and they can learn very quickly to separate by shape or separate by color, and even, you know, soon separate by, you know, functionality. For example, we could use the ball to play a game outside, or we can use the blocks to build a tower in the classroom. So we can start teaching these concepts at a very young age, and then at appropriate age levels, you introduce more, you know, complex aspects of that, and with eventually the math and the science. But, you know, work with the educators and try to find out what is the right level of material and just introduce it everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's an excellent cause to champion. To skip around just really quickly before we close, can you give me a sense of what you're working on now, what the future research horizon looks like for you?
Well, I'm certainly staying involved with the astrophysics, but people who know me well know that I've quite diversified in my research interests these days. And one that area that has really fascinated me, which ties us back into these graph processors, these graph-based supercomputers, and that's a project I'm working on, actually three projects in one, with the National Institutes of Health, National Library of Medicine. And that is, they've put their entire archive, their entire database of PubMed, medical publications, into a graph database. And by that, I mean they put the metadata, that is the titles mm-hmm. of the papers, the authors, the citations, the references, the keywords, all of these sort of little nuggets or granules of information that you can now link to other things, like show me all papers that talk about this topic or that were written by that author or that were cited by this other person. And within this graph database, this linked database of medical knowledge, you can do all kinds of different research projects. I have a student who's looking for anomalies, that is finding interesting connections between papers that you wouldn't otherwise expect. And there's examples in the research literature now of people making discoveries about cancer treatments that they didn't otherwise expect, because they discovered some drug had some efficacious effect for patients in another area, and attempted to try that on the cancer patient and found that it worked. And so this was basically discovered through database mining. And so this whole idea of linked data and graph processing and the graph computing model is quite fascinating for me now. And it's taking me a bit outside of astronomy, but eventually I want to bring it back to astronomy.
Right. So that's the promise of big data, right? To find answers to questions you didn't even know you had. Right?
Exactly. That's what I would call data science. To me, data science is using the data to help you formulate a question or hypothesis that you couldn't have imagined before.
Right. Well, Kirk, this has been absolutely fascinating. We'll have you back on to check in on the National Institutes of Health project. We appreciate your time today.
Well, thank you very much, Nicole. I'm glad to be here.
Thanks.
All right, bye-bye.